Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Stucky of the Action Network will join us. We will break down all of the Sweet 16 games for Friday as we are now down to 12 teams left in college basketball. UConn does what they've done for the past 2 years, and that is destroy everything in their path as they bury San Diego State Thursday night and just win a blowout similar to the game last year in the national title game where it's close at moments, but other than that, UConn looked like the superior team, and they pull away, and they win in dominant fashion. But the other three games, finally, at some point here, you figured you get some underdogs to win and cover, and we got that. Illinois-Iowa State was a low line, but Illinois, as a 1.5-point underdog, wins. They cover, as do the other two underdogs. Clemson, as a 7.5-point underdog, they win, they cover. And Bama, which I think the first score I saw was – North Carolina was up, I think, like 28-19, 29-19. You figure, all right, here we go again with these favorites steamrolling the underdogs. But not so fast. Bama rallies back. Bacot missed a dunk late. North Carolina ran some terrible offense. North Carolina was down four with like 8 seconds left, and they used like 7.5 seconds to get a two-pointer, which made no sense. So we are set up now for an Elite Eight on Saturday. That is UConn laying 8.5 against Illinois. And Alabama laying 3 against Clemson. Bama and Clemson, you think those two schools, you think of football. I mean, the 2018 national title game. I mean, you think of all the matchups, the 2016 national title game. So that's twice those schools played for national titles in football. Now they will meet here for a chance to advance to the Final Four. So some fun games. Look, at first glance, the 8.5 does look a little heavy here with Illinois and UConn, but it's the same thing over and over again with UConn, where you look at the opening line, boy, do I really want to lay that many points? That seems like a lot of points. Then the game starts and you say, oh, I don't know that I want to be the underdog. That might be not enough points. So Illinois does have enough shot making. They have enough length, enough athleticism, where I actually think this will be a close game. I wouldn't lay the 8.5. If I had to take it or lay it, I think I would take it. I think we're at a point now where these books are just juicing the lines with UConn, saying, hey, I dare you to take the other side. I dare you to bet against UConn. So if I had to take it or lay it, I would take it with Illinois. I do think this is too many points. So should be two competitive games here on Saturday. I mean, we're down to 12 teams left. It's not like we're going to get any, I don't think we're at the point where we're going to get any just complete mismatches anymore. Most of the Cinderellas are gone. That being said, nobody thought Clemson was going to be in the Elite Eight. Nobody thought NC State was going to be in the Sweet 16. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. If UConn can just steamroll Illinois, we might be at the point where, hey, this is just their tournament and they are going to put another banner up. And look, I never thought once Calhoun left and they were in that little bit of a rut with Ali, with the American Conference when they were out of the Big East, where I just never thought they were going to get back to the point where they were just this dominant force. But they are at that point where they are just destroying everybody in their path. And they did it again Thursday night. So should be fun games on Saturday. I would lean towards Illinois plus the points. I'll make that a bet. Illinois plus the 8.5. As far as Bama and Clemson, it's so tough with Bama because it's all dependent on the 3-point shot. I mean, they get hot from three, they're going to win. If they're cold from three, they're not going to win. Hall's a great player for Clemson. I'll go with Bama. I guess Bama gets it done and Bama gets to a Final Four, which is funny because everyone kind of counted them out with how poor they played defensively the last month or so of the season. They've gotten destroyed in some of these games late in the season. But you know what? Tournament's a new day. They survived against Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon missed a bunch of threes, a bunch of free throws. North Carolina had their opportunities to put the game away. They didn't. And you know what? You look up, and Bama is favored to go to the Final Four. So Illinois plus the points, Bama laying the points would be the picks for Saturday. And the games for Friday, boy, it's tough. There's nothing I really love for these games Saturday. I think NC State does have enough offense with Burns and the four shooters around him to keep it close. So I would take the 6.5 for NC State. We'll get into it more with Stucky here, but I do think NC State has enough offense, enough firepower. They come into this game loosey-goosey where, you know, they weren't even supposed to make the tournament. Now they're 2 wins away from the Final Four. They're a win away from the Elite Eight, where I think they have enough around Burns with Burns and the four shooters where, hey, Marquette's a good team. They're not a great team. I think NC State can keep it close. So that would be my pick for Friday. I like the dog in Illinois, and I would lay it with Bama on Saturday. But we will discuss more of these Sweet 16 games in greater detail. We will do a deep dive on every single game with Stucky. That is next. This is the Should A Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should A Bet More podcast. Let's break down the Friday games here for the Sweet 16. You can hear him at the Action Network. He is the Prime Minister of Degenerate Nation. It is the great Stucky. Stucky, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on. How long? I've never asked you this. How long is your stint, your term as Prime Minister of Degenerate Nation? Is there an election we need to know about? And how's it going?
Yeah, well, after my first round, we might have to have an election. I had a bad first round. I did have like a crazy round robin that got me in the green for the weekend. But I had too many double-digit underdogs, which basically, no matter who you picked, you weren't getting a cover. So maybe we have to have an election coming up.
And I was going to ask you about
the popular vote right now.
I was going to ask you, does that creep into your mind when you have a chalky round? And I know some people think like this and look at, I don't care how smart you are. I mean, you're not immune to thinking like, hey, all the favorites won. Maybe the dogs are due at some point. Does that sort of thought process creep in your mind, or just is it, hey, these are isolated games. Last week has nothing to do with this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you had thousands of game sample size and, you know, favorites were dominating at this clip, which, you know, double digit favorites, I think were, depending on the number you got, I think maybe 16-2 against the spread, best ever. Favorites had their best ever first weekend since 2008, top four seeds had their best ever weekend. But if you had over thousands of games, then yeah, there'd probably be some regression. But look, there's only eight games in the Sweet 16, four more in the Elite Eight. So you're only talking about a sample size of 12 games that nothing has to regress. The favorites could have another dominant weekend. So yeah, don't think like that. It's easy to do. But you know, think about if you went into Sunday thinking that
exactly.
Last weekend, you could have said, oh, all the favorites dominated. They went 8-0 straight up. It's been a chalky tournament. Let me bet all the underdogs on Sunday. And you would have gotten killed again. So yeah, throw that all out the window. Lines are, I mean, the market knows pretty much who these teams are by now. And, you know, then the respected money is going to shape these lines. And a lot of these games, you know, if you look at a lot of the double digit underdogs last week, a lot of these games just come down to 3-point variance, random end game scenarios. And you just hope that you're on the good end of them. But most of these games are going to come down to matchups. And especially in this Sweet 16, and judging by the teams that are going to be left, the whistle, officials are going to have a major role in who gets in foul trouble, who doesn't. There's no better example of that than any Purdue game. And if, like, for example, Purdue plays Tennessee, if both those teams advance, the first time they met in Maui, Purdue shot 48 free throws. So foul trouble, how these, you have some really physical defenses left, Tennessee, Houston, Iowa State. How are those teams going to be allowed to defend and impose their will? That'll be a huge storyline, especially with Houston, because they really lack depth due to some injuries that they've suffered throughout the season. So yeah, with these big men, like, can UConn avoid Klingon getting in foul trouble? How do the refs whistle teams defending Edie? The whistle, 3-point variance, and then just random endgame luck. That's college basketball. And the markets just become more and more efficient over time. So it just seems like those things decide more and more outcomes as the years progress.
All right, let's get into the games here. The first game on Friday, the early game, it is the darling, the Cinderella of this tournament, NC State against Marquette, laying 6.5, total 151.5. I would lean towards the dog here, but I think I like the over here. I think both these teams have a path to being successful on offense. Again, nothing I bet. As much as these games are great from a viewing standpoint, I don't know that any of the eight games heading into this weekend were games that I really loved. But let's just talk NC State, Marquette. What do you got in this game?
Yeah, something to bring up is, you know, you're going to be playing in new gyms now, neutral sites. So, like, you don't know. Like, last week we had the net issue out west where, like, the ball was, it was slow to come down after made shots. You could have type. You never really know. So that's something that I always keep my eye on. But something to note is that Elite Eights have lent themselves to, and then Final Fours have been more of an overround. I think part of that is teams play, this is all completely anecdotal, but teams play tighter from what I've just looked at and pay stats. But teams play tighter in the Elite Eight. Like, oh, they're so close to getting to the Final Four, and you play slower. And then once you get to the Final Four, teams like, oh, we're here, and you play a little looser. Completely anecdotal. But in regards to this matchup, this is all going to come down to, can NC State hit threes? And they've tweaked their lineup, so they've been much better. And they're gonna work inside out. They're gonna work through DJ Burns in the post. They're one of the most post heavy offenses in the country, along with Purdue and Gonzaga, who will face each other. They're two in the top four. We'll get to that game. But they're gonna feed it into Burns. Now, Marquette's postie is bad. So what I assume will happen is Marquette's gonna have to trap, double, help on Burns. And Burns is an elite passer with elite vision. And he's going to find shooters on the perimeter. And can they hit their shots? If they can, they can keep up with Marquette. If they're not, it could spell trouble. Because, the other good thing I should mention is NC State doesn't turn the ball over. They're top 10 in the nation. That's important against Marquette's pressure defense. And Marquette will give you threes. They're bottom 20, I think, at three-point attempt rate allowed. So work it into Burns. Burns is going to get some of his buckets, but I assume that Marquette's going to have to help. Burns is going to find shooters. Can those shooters make shots? Because if they can't, then Marquette is going to roast NC State on the other end. NC State, horrendous pick-and-roll defense. Marquette, one of the most heavy pick and roll offenses in the entire country, led by Tyler Kolek. They're going to put Burns in conflict and just roast him. And, you know, NC State will press sometimes, can't press Marquette. So I don't think that we'll see much press here, but Marquette doesn't turn it over. Marquette weak on the glass on both ends, but NC State isn't really an elite rebounding team. So I think off of NC State misses, Marquette's going to get out in transition and they're going to score there. And in the half court with the pick and roll, with Kolek moving Burns around, they're going to score at will on that end. And NC State, look, this run's been great. They tweaked their lineup. Burns has been awesome. But over their last six games, opponents are shooting just 28% from three. Leading up to that point, they were outside the top 300 in three-point percentage allowed. So maybe there's some looming regression. Marquette can certainly shoot the rock. So it's hard for me to see how NC State's going to get consistent stops in this game. Really comes down to, can NC State make those threes? I think this will be a faster paced game. So I would agree with you. There are paths to offense on both ends. So I don't hate the over as a look here. I'd lean Marquette, but just because I trust their offense to get easier buckets than NC State, but I'm pretty close to the number.
The next game, 7:40 Eastern, Purdue, Gonzaga. Purdue and Gonzaga have met. This will be the third time basically since last Thanksgiving. So Gonzaga has seen them. Now Purdue beat them both times, but Gonzaga led by five at the half earlier in the year. You mentioned Purdue shot a zillion free throws. Gonzaga did not shoot the ball well from three in that game, 6 of 32. Gonzaga is not a deep team, so fouls will be an issue. Maybe that's a good live betting opportunity. I lean towards the dog. Again, nothing I'm passionate about. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, no, Gonzaga, Purdue actually didn't shoot a ton of free throws in the game. Against Tennessee, they shot 48. I think they only shot like 14 or 15.
Oh, okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Against Gonzaga, Edie had a majority of those. Yeah, you're right. Gonzaga led by five at the half, lost by 10. They were 0-14 from three in the second half. They shot it horrendously, although so did Purdue. But this game, the whistle will be huge. Two of the most post-centric offenses in the country, Edie versus Graham Ike. And, you know, Gonzaga does a really good job of defending without fouling. Both of these teams do. They're in the top 20 in the nation in that department. But Purdue is much more adept at drawing fouls because of Zach Edie, and he's impossible to defend. In that early season matchup, I think Ike got four fouls, and I'm not sure if Edie had any. And you're right. Gonzaga, the whistle will be huge this game because Gonzaga has no depth. Bottom five in the country in bench minutes. So can Ige stay out of foul trouble? That will be massive. If he can, you know, and you mentioned a live betting opportunity. If Ige gets in foul trouble, I think the over might be worth a look, a live over, because Gonzaga can go with a more mobile five, and they're going to look to pull Ige away from the rim. They're going to look to put Purdue in conflict, pick and roll offense, which they're very good at. And Purdue's pick and roll defense actually slightly below national average. So there's paths for Gonzaga to get offense here. And if Ike gets in foul trouble, I think their offense can be a little more versatile. And on the other side of the floor, like without Ike, you're going to get, you know, an Edie dunk fest and maybe more trips to the free throw line. So I'll be looking about a live over if that happens. But I think Gonzaga has passed offense here. It's a team that's been red hot from three, shooting over 40% since February 1st, top five in the nation. Could say, all right, are they going to keep that up? But you could say the same thing for Purdue. Purdue's actually a step above that, 42% since February 1st. So both of these teams are shooting the lights out. So yeah, I would lean the dog here, but so much of it is going to come down to the whistle. Just how are they calling this game early? Who gets in early foul trouble? And Gonzaga really cannot afford to get in foul trouble. So yeah, I mean, Gonzaga can, they have guys who can operate in the mid range. They can get offense via pick and roll. They can kind of move Edie around. And Ben Gregg has just been a revelation for Gonzaga. You know, I didn't really believe it ahead of that Kansas game of how well he's been playing and how much of an impact he makes, you know, because they're playing in the WCC, and over the last, you know, month and a half, they lost twice to St. Mary's. You're not playing top tier competition, but he was fantastic against Kansas. And if he could play like that again, Gonzaga is certainly live. For what it's worth, Mark Few in his tournament career, 28-14 to the over in the second round or later, usually has a really good offensive game plan, got some extra preparation here. So I would expect Gonzaga to have a great offensive game plan, heavy pick and roll, and, you know, putting Edie in conflict, and Gonzaga can score. It's just hard for me to see them getting too many stops, and especially if they get in foul trouble. That's the wild card here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting too, because Few's a veteran coach. I think people respect him. People like him. I wonder if he goes to the refs before the game or during the game and says, "Hey, give my guys a shot here. Let's have a fair whistle. Let's have a fair fight." So that'll be an interesting cat and mouse game. And you know, you bring up a good point about the fouls piling up and live betting. I don't know how much live betting you do, but if you notice, I don't know that they properly adjust sometimes when the fouls start to pile up early. You can get in on the over, and that bonus is everything, where you're going to the line and stopping the clock. And I don't know that it always gets accounted for in the algorithm in terms of the live betting.
Yeah, I love the bet. I prefer to bet live in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, look for opportunities like that, because the market is super efficient. And a lot of this, like I'm going to mention a lot, it's going to come down to three-point variance. It's going to come down to the whistle. And then certain things in the matchup on how you see it playing out, how teams have adjusted their rotation. And so, yeah, I'll definitely be looking to bet all of these games live. But Gonzaga's going to have to hit their jumpers. You're not going to be able to just work through EK in the post. They're going to have to, because both of these teams are great at defending at the rim as well. They're going to have to hit their mid-range, and they're going to have to hit their threes, because if they're not, I don't know if they can get enough stops, and Purdue is an elite defensive rebounding team. So I'm not sure how many second chance opportunities they're going to get. Purdue also is very good at limiting transition opportunities. Gonzaga is great in transition. So this is going to come down to, can Gonzaga execute in the half court? And that's pick and roll. All right, let's move Edie around. But it's ultimately going to come down to jump shots in the mid-range from three. Can they hit those? You know, they might cool off. You could say the same thing about Purdue. I think Gonzaga is going to be a little bit more reliant on the jumpers in this game. But 5.5, especially if this gets to six, I think Gonzaga's live here, but the whistle's going to play a huge role.
The next game, Duke and Houston, another fascinating matchup. I do think Houston maybe just a little tougher. And again, this is another game where the whistle is going to be so important, but just a little more, a little too physical, a little too tough. And this game is in Texas, so maybe they get the whistle, which, I mean, there's always a conspiracy. Duke gets all the calls, but where are you at with this game? Have you bet anything?
Haven't bet anything yet. Do have a Houston future. So I'll be pulling for Houston. Don't mind the under in this game. I also think it'll be a good live bet. I love live betting Houston games. Like they go on runs, and then, you know, their offense goes cold for stretches. Then they can go like 5 minutes where you can't score on them. There's big swings in Houston games for a team that plays lower scoring games. So, you know, if Duke goes up, is hot from three early, and this game's going to come down to Duke's 3-point shooting. Let's be honest, like, and the whistle too, because Houston's depth is questionable. If Juwan Roberts is not fully healthy, that's another thing that could help Duke, because Houston suffered injuries. They don't have as much depth. It almost caught. They had four guys foul out. They were relying on a walk-on against Texas A&M in overtime. They even had to go to a zone defense, which you never see out of Sampson. But in order to beat Houston's aggressive, elite, long defense, you got to hit three. You got to take care of the ball, which Duke can do. You have to get to the line and crash the offensive glass because they're so aggressive, you know, two to the ball, swarming D. There's some opportunities to get offensive rebounds. Duke's not elite at getting to the line or elite at getting offensive rebounds, but they're good enough in those departments. And then you got to move the ball and hit threes. And Duke certainly has a plethora of shooters who can hit contested shots, which you need to do against Houston. Houston will give up threes, but they have so much length and they're so well-schooled. For each of the past six seasons, Houston has not allowed opponents to shoot over 30% from three. But long twos, too. No one can hit long twos. No one can hit threes. Even though they're open for a split second, if you can move the ball, there's so much length and they're coming at you and they close out so well. But Duke is capable of hitting those shots. Now, they're going to try to run a lot of pick and roll. Houston is so good at defending that. They're going to blow it all up. So like, Duke's going to have to move the ball, and they're going to have to hit threes. And, you know, if they go 14 to 28 like they did against JMU, they're going to move on. But no one does that against Houston. You brought up a great point early on when you set up this game. It's the physicality of Houston. All year I've said what's going to cost this Duke team and kind of what I gathered from watching them all year was they're sort of like Creighton. They're pretty soft. And I think that was the difference in their matchups with North Carolina. You know, you could see that North Carolina is just, it kind of looked like men versus boys in some aspects. And North Carolina kind of just out-physicaled them. Like, you know, one of the oldest teams in the country. Well, it doesn't get any more physical than Houston. And if you recall last year in the tournament, everyone's favorite underdog, Oral Roberts, played Duke. And Oral Roberts' trendy underdog pick, Duke flattened them. And then the next game, everyone said, oh, wow, Duke's back. Duke looks dangerous. They have a ton of talent, which they do, and they do it again this year. Duke went up against Tennessee and were just out-physicaled off the court. And I think only scored 52 points in that game. Well, fast forward to this year, trendy underdog, JMU. Everyone said JMU is going to beat Duke. Duke destroyed them. And then guess what? Now they're going up against a very physical Houston defense. I tend to trust Shed, the experience of Houston and that physicality to get it done. But I'm right around market here. I'll look to bet Houston live if Duke starts off hot from three. I don't mind a live under. Duke wants to play slow. The good thing for Duke is in those games where they've been out-physicaled, you know, Arizona comes to mind, North Carolina, is those teams really got out in transition and cooked them. That's not going to be this game. This game will be played in the half court. Houston's super slow. Duke wants to play slow. Duke 13-3 to the under in their past 16 games. There's a chance that Duke just can't score, similar to what happened against Tennessee. And if they're not hitting their threes, good night. But I'm going to be watching early, first 5 minutes. Can Duke compete on the glass? Like, go get the 50-50 balls? Or are they just going to let Houston eat up on the offensive glass, which is their best path to offense? Especially if Cryer and Sharp aren't hitting threes. But that's where you'll see if Duke can handle the physicality. If they can, that means they're not turning the ball over. They're competing on the glass. And they're going to get looks from three. Do they go? If they do at a high clip, Duke's going to have a chance. If they don't, they're going home. So I'll be looking to bet this game live. Favorite look pregame is probably the under. But a lot of, I mean, you're not going to find super big edges unless you have a matchup you really like, or there's like an injury, you know, the market, we pretty much know where these teams should be priced around, but I'll definitely be looking to bet this game live. Even Duke, if they get down big early and it's just because of shooting and it looks like they're handling the physicality okay, I'll be looking to potentially bet Duke live based on the number. But that's the key to this game. Obviously, Duke threes, that's going to be every game, 3-point shooting variance. But can Duke handle the physicality? You'll know first 5 minutes.
And the last game, Tennessee, Creighton. Boy, this is not a game. I say this about a lot of these games. As great as this game is going to be to watch, and it's exciting, I don't have a great feel for this in terms of the side or the total. I guess I picked Tennessee. They're laying 2.5, total 144. You mentioned the toughness aspect of Tennessee. They did. Were able to sustain a 3-from-25 from three against Texas in Marchand. What are you looking at for this game?
Yeah, I'd look Tennessee here. Now the wild card, the Creighton is the ultimate 3-point shooting variance team. They shoot threes at a top 10 clip and they make them at a top 30 rate. They're going to get up a ton of threes. If they make them as they have been through the first two games of the tournament, then they're scary. But look, they shot 25 of 56, 45% in their first two games. Their opponents shot 13 of 49, 26%. And Akron was in the game until they missed like 17 straight threes. And Oregon should have beat them. So even while shooting 45%, Creighton's lucky to be here. And you mentioned it, Tennessee, 3 of 25, I think they shot from three. Connect had an off game, and they got away with it. So when I look at this game, you know, Creighton is going to play their heavy drop defense with Kalkbrenner anchoring that unit near the rim. They take away the three. What that means, they're going to take away the three, take away shooters, and they're great at defending at the rim with Kalkbrenner's length, who also does a really good job of defending without fouling. Something to watch with the refs here. But Tennessee has a ton of bodies to throw, ton of length, ton of bodies to throw at Kalkbrenner. But you have to operate in the mid-range against Creighton, and that's where I think Dalton Connect can really go off. That ultimately might be the difference. The same thing can be said on the other end. You got to operate in the mid-range against Tennessee. Tennessee, elite rim defense, they close out on shooters as well as any team in the country. 99th percentile in guarded jump shot rate. So, like, you just don't get open looks against them. Trey Alexander, great mid-range player. Maybe he can have a big game, but I'll take Connect and his length, shot-making ability, and him bouncing back in this game, which I think will be the difference. Now, Rick Barnes has been dreadful. He's the least profitable coach in NCAA tournament history in terms of against the spread numbers. I think as a favorite of less than 10 or an underdog, he's 1-14 against the spread since 2010, which is pretty hard to believe. So does he make – I mean, it's a decent sample size – but I think Connect can cook here in the mid-range. I think Tennessee, they're just such a great perimeter defense. They have the bodies to throw out Kalkbrenner. And their physicality on the ball, like Steven Ashworth, is he going to be able to play in this game? So that's a question for me. And I think ultimately, as long as Connect has a good game, Tennessee is going to get more possessions and more shots because they're going to get more offensive rebounds. Creighton doesn't even look to offensive rebound. And they're going to force more turnovers. Creighton, dead last in the country in forcing turnovers. They never go after offensive rebounds. Really good defensive rebound team, but Tennessee's still going to get some second chance looks. So those forced turnovers, offensive rebounds, going to lead to a higher volume of shots or presumably Connect, most importantly. And I think he has a big bounce back game. I think that's ultimately the difference. If Creighton is hot from three, great. They'll probably advance, but Tennessee is just like Houston. Great contest, jump shot contesting defense. Tennessee's defense has taken a step back from last year. Where you see that is in transition. I think they're like 30th percentile per synergy in transition D. Last year they were elite, so they're not as good in transition. But Creighton's not really looking to run. They're good in transition when they do, so maybe they can get some easy buckets. Maybe they can get some, you know, open floor threes. But they're not really looking to run. They play more methodical. So this game will be played more in the half court, and it's who's going to hit more of those mid-range jumpers. I trust Kinect to do that against the clock drop. And then I expect Tennessee to just have a few more possessions because they're going to get more offensive rebounds and they're going to force more turnovers with their ball pressure, which can give Creighton fits. So I think Tennessee advances. They have the length and physicality advantage, which, and then Kinect, the best player on the court, which I think will be the difference.
All right, I want to get to a couple lightning round questions just so I can use them. We do this thing now where we have a trivia for people who listen to the pod. So a bunch of random questions. But before I get to that, what's your just gut take on Ohtani and whatever everything that happened there? What do you think happened? And how do you think this plays out?
I find it hard to believe that he didn't know anything. But admittedly, I haven't followed the story that closely. I have this weekend to get through and then I'm full on baseball. I've seen tons of theories and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. What do you think ultimately happened? And I'll let you know if I
didn't really believe it, or I was like, man, if you gave me true serum, I'd say, you know what, Ohtani's probably betting. It's a hard time seeing a bookie extend $5 million of credit to an interpreter who's making probably a couple hundred grand a year. Then, Ohtani really doubled down at the press conference saying, hey, flat out, this money was stolen. So, maybe it's not the craziest thing he gave access. He just turned over his life to this interpreter and said, I don't want to deal with it. And he didn't know. I started to buy into a little bit. And again, it's changing by the minute. But the fact that he's hiring these lawyers that are, I don't know, pretty big time lawyers, I kind of sense that, boy, it's hard to believe. It is hard to believe. I would say it's a favorite that something's missing. I would put it that way. Something's missing. We don't have the whole story. I don't know that we'll get the whole story. I mean, he's motivated and Major League Baseball is motivated for this thing to go away. Now, do they have the power? Does his, I think CAA represents him. Do they have the power to make this go away and just say, hey, let's just go with this story and have it move on? Because it's not like Major League Baseball is looking to bust them. He's a face of their sport. So I don't know. I'm fascinated to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it would be a black eye for the sport. And there's a lot of these things coming up. And we're even seeing now, like college, the NCAA commissioner is looking to ban player props in college basketball in every state as of this morning. I don't know what that would do.
I mean, it's crazy.
Just going to take everything. It's not like you're stopping offshore
right
markets from offering that. I think that's just like but I think states will oblige. Like, they're just like, all right, player props, we low percentage for handle, we probably lose money on them. It's good for publicity. So player props might be on their last leg for college basketball as a result of some of this stuff. But I would argue that because of regulation, we find out we have a better chance of finding stuff like this out, like the NBA, it was Jonte Porter. But yeah, we're going to have people overreact to all these stories. But the Ohtani one, I'm sure they're going to try to find a way to try to make this go away. I'll be super curious how this plays out over the summer.
A couple quick ones before we get you out of here. Most underrated TV show of all time. These are just for trivia purposes. No wrong or right answer, unless you say something that's wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
Most underrated TV show, Justified.
Okay.
It's arguably
best TV show of all time. Best TV show of all time.
The Wire. No question. Hands down. Period.
I'm with you. What is it? What would you be your second? I mean, to me, that and Sopranos is close. But I don't know. Wire minus 150, something like that over Sopranos. Wire is just so good.
Sopranos probably two. And Breaking Bad's up there. I honestly might have like Justified in my top five.
Tier below. I gotta check that out.
Breaking Bad but yeah, Wire, clear one, and Sopranos two.
Any MLB team you think has value in terms of a future?
I don't know. I haven't done much work in MLB.
If I gave you $100 free bet right now, I'll phrase it that way. If I gave you $100 free bet, whatever.
The only bet I made is I took a flyer on the Rays.
Okay.
Just that organization is so good. They just make something out of nothing with so many guys. They'll find a way to get that pitching right. Maybe they get a couple guys healthier on the staff later in the season. Their pen will be good. And they just find ways. They're just a smart organization. Hope that division beats each other up. There's kind of some cannibalization and Tampa Bay sneaks in. My dream scenario is like Tampa obviously winning the World Series and beating the Dodgers for the, like small market going up against all that money. That would be amazing. That's the only baseball bet I made. So if you gave me a $100 free bet, I would put it on.
All right. Yeah, and they certainly are resourceful, but man, they can't keep these pitchers healthy. I mean, Baz and McClanahan and Springs, it's just these pitchers drop like flies. Not that they don't for other teams, but seems exaggerated with them. Has your interest in baseball lessened? Is it just, hey, there's so much going on? I've noticed baseball, you do kind of less of it. You used to be great. I followed you for a while. Women's tennis, you used to just crush it. Do you bet less of that stuff? Do you cap less of that stuff? Is that just, hey, life gets in the way?
Yeah, I just don't have as much time. Yeah. The market's definitely more efficient. I'm still always trying to find my balance in sports. Like, I'm a one-man operation. I think I told you before, I used to get crushed in college football. NFL's always been consistent. College basketball used to be my best sport. College football, I got crushed in yearly. If I played football my whole life, I would bet, fire the board on Saturdays, would get crushed. It was 20, 30 units average for like 10 years. Wouldn't spend any time on it. Spent all whole summer, all of September, October doing NFL, college basketball, women's tennis. But now it started Action Network. We got to do college football podcast, write about it. I got to get good at college. I can't be putting shit out. So I spend my entire summer now and all throughout the season following it closely. Now college football is one of my best sports, but I've lost the time for women's tennis. And now college basketball has suffered because I'm so far behind and I'm spending more time on college football during the season. And on top of that, college basketball's, the market is, you know, continues to get more efficient. So I'm trying to always find that balance. Markets evolve. You have to adapt. For example, some of the spots that I used to play in college basketball, just I know this spot is money. Like, it's, they're all priced out now, especially after open. I mean, they moved 4 points. And, you know, from 5 years ago, a game that would have opened +3 now opens a pick and closes -3. So, yeah, I'm always trying to evolve and adapt. And it's always push and pull, but I just don't have as much time. Baseball, I'll grind. I think I have, like, over my last 8,000 bets, I'm up like, I don't know, 15 units. It's like, you might as well put it in a checking account, but I enjoy the, doubt I even have any real edge. Once in a while, I'll find some good spots, but I enjoy the grind of betting baseball. I love watching baseball. So as long as I'm just profitable, I'm betting really small on baseball. So it's more of a recreational hobby during the summer and spring as I'm prepping for football. But yeah, I'm still trying to find that balance between college football. It used to be an afterthought, but now it takes up so much of my time. And now with the transfer portal and then college basketball, the transfer portal is even more complex. There's more teams. So yeah, it's a constant battle, but it's why I love this grind. You're never going to fully master it. And you could be, you know, everyone is going to have their day when they're no longer sharp and they can no longer beat the market. And the markets are going to continue to evolve. You have to evolve. You have to adapt or you'll die. And it's just such a challenge. And I enjoy the sweat so much that it's a complete labor of love. And yeah, so still trying to find that balance with college football and college basketball. And hopefully I can find some more time for tennis shortly. Still bet like the majors in the summer, but I'm just so far behind now because college football is taken up at just all of my time. And I used to take up zero.
Yeah, I know some people that used to bet baseball, just big, do it religiously, like just almost like a full-time job, that basically don't even do it anymore because it's so much different with the bullpens where with baseball, I mean, a large part of your handicap is the starting pitcher. Now the starting pitchers, it's just like, you know, 5 innings, 4 innings. Sometimes it's sometimes in the playoffs, they go once through the lineup. It's just, it makes it very hard to handicap for some people.
Yeah. Markets. I mean, there's some people with really good player models. Once lineups come out, you'll see markets move, and I know some people that are really good at projecting, you know, which is the key to it. How long pitchers are going to go, who's going to pitch out of the pen. You got to have a really, really advanced state, like top of the line player model, I think, to beat baseball without information, and obviously information as always. But baseball market, just like everything else, way more efficient than it was,
yep,
15 years ago. I wish I could go back in time and I had more money when I was betting college basketball in the early mid 2000s when it was pretty easy to beat. I was nowhere close to as advanced as I am now, but was way more successful. Just didn't have as much money as I do now.
Yeah. All right, Stuck, you're the best, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, at Stucky2 on X, in the Action Network app. You can find me. Big Bets on Campus podcast. We'll have a bunch of pods out. All Tournament, Action Network Podcast for all the football stuff. And yeah, just follow me on X. I always tweet everything out. But it was a pleasure to join you, and happy to do it whenever you need me.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate all the info all season. And we'll hopefully catch up here down the road.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate Stucky for joining the podcast. We will see you guys next week as we will have a Final Four to discuss. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. See you next week.